Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 9. Prahlad pacifies the Lord with prayers. Text number 34. Taisambhava kavir atom yad apashyamanas. Tvam vidam atmani tatam navahira vichintya. Na vindaravda shata apsu nima janmanau. Jaten kure katam uhapalabdeta bijam. Tat sambhava, who was generated from that lotus flower. Kavi, he who can understand the subtle cause of creation, Lord Brahma. Ata, from that lotus. Anyat, anything else. Apashyamana, not able to see. Tvam, your lordship. Bijam, the cause of the lotus. Atmani, in himself. Tatam, expanded. Saha, he, Lord Brahma. Bahi, vichintya, considering to be external. Na, not. Avindat, understood. You. Abda satam. For 100 years, according to the demigods. Apsu, in the water. Nimajamana, diving. Jite, ankure, when the seed fructifies and is manifest as a creeper. Katam, how? Uha, O my Lord. Upalabheta, one can perceive. Bijam, the seed that has already fructified. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. From that great lotus flower, Brahma was generated. But Brahma certainly could see nothing but the lotus. Therefore, thinking you to be outside, Lord Brahma dove into the water, attempted to find the source of the lotus for 100 years. He could find no trace of you. However, for when a seed fructifies, the original seed cannot be seen. Purport. This is a description of the cosmic manifestation. The development of the cosmic manifestation is like the fructification of a seed. When cotton is transformed into thread, the cotton is no longer visible. And when the thread is woven into cloth, the thread is no longer visible. Similarly, it is perfectly correct that when the seed that had generated from the navel of Garbhadakshai Vishnu became manifest as a cosmic creation, one could no longer understand where the cause of the cosmic manifestation is. Material scientists have tried to explain the origin of creation by a chunk theory, but no one can explain how such a chunk might have burst. The Vedic literature, however, explains clearly that the total material energy was agitated by the three modes of material nature because of the glance of the Supreme Lord. In other words, in terms of the chunk theory, the bursting of the chunk was caused by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, one must accept the Supreme Cause. Lord Vishnu is the cause of all causes. From that great lotus flower, Brahma was generated, but Brahma certainly could see nothing but the lotus. Therefore, thinking you to be the outside, Lord Brahma dove into the water and attempted to find the source of the lotus for 100 years. He could find no trace of you. However, when a seed fructifies, the original seed cannot be seen. Well, Prabhupada is taking any theory here, including the so-called chunk theory, which I don't know if we hear about very often nowadays, that in the beginning there was nothing or hardly anything. There is just enough energy to form some gas. Where that came from, no one knows. May have appeared after a Sunday feast or something. In any case, somehow that gas formed into a chunk and the chunk exploded. So Prabhupada's saying here that even if that was true, which I don't believe Prabhupada thought was true, still someone must have exploded it. There must be a cause behind everything. Everything we see has a cause. Nothing happens out of accident. And besides that, if everything came out of nothing, then why do not more things come out of nothing? Why did nothing create something and then decide to retire, go back into nothingness? So these are all science fiction. It has nothing to do with science. No one has ever seen anything come out of nothing. Nor has anyone seen that by itself a chunk, nothing forms into a chunk and then explodes with no cause. So these are all just imagination. But in any case, however things came about, it must have been come about with some intelligence. Because otherwise, if we see intelligent arrangements, then we must assume that there must be an intelligent arranger. Material nature doesn't do anything by itself. We can have this chair sit here for 10,000 years and it's not going to get up and sweep the floor. It's just going to sit here as a chair because material nature is unconscious by its nature. But the conscious living entity can take the material nature and do something with it, transform it. And therefore, there's the difference between the conscious and the unconscious. And anyone who doesn't know that, it's because they're unconscious. They're closer to the unconscious than they are to the conscious. Interesting here that Lord Brahma, he dove into the water, so this is the origin of diving. But we can understand it must have taken a long time to... If he jumped off the lotus flower, it's quite a big lotus flower. But he's quite big also, so we don't know how long it took him. But for 100 years, he was swimming around trying to find out where the lotus flower came from. So, I don't know if it's 100 years of the demigods. Obviously, it's not the 100 years of his life. He would have been dead by the time he... Some kind of 100 years. And then he figured out he was not going to find out, so he sat. He heard the words tapa, the two Vedic syllables, ta-pa. And when they're put together, they mean to heat up. And to heat up means to heat up one's consciousness. The material nature is dull. And in order to make it spiritualized, we have to put it into the spiritual energy. And that's done by tapasya. Tapasya meaning voluntarily giving up sense gratification so that one can fix one's mind upon Krishna. And when one tries to fix one's mind upon Krishna and remains aloof from sense gratification, then one's consciousness heats up. And then finally, after some time, Lord Brahma was able to see the spiritual world. Now, it wasn't simply due to Lord Brahma's tapasya. It is due to the fact that he showed some interest in seeing the spiritual world, and therefore he did something which would show that interest. And when Krishna saw he had an interest, a sincere interest, then Krishna reciprocated accordingly. So, maybe in the next verse, Prabhupada would say, everyone can come to do the same. If we follow Lord Brahma's process, and try to fix the mind upon Krishna and give up sense gratification, we can also eventually become fully spiritualized and then be able to see the unmanifested spiritual world. That's up to how much determination we develop, and that determination will develop in the course of time when one gets the happy result of fixing the mind upon Krishna. One cannot become determined to do anything unless one gets a higher taste. So that higher taste in Krishna consciousness is when we're actually able to think about Krishna properly. And that begins with thinking about this world properly, because the reason why we can't think about anything properly is that our intelligence is always being stolen by illusion. And therefore, instead of seeing things in reality, we're seeing things according to the modes of material nature we're situated under. So one has to become convinced that I don't see things properly because my intelligence has been stolen, and now I have to do something that enables me to be able to see things as they actually are. So first of all, one has to become convinced that I don't see things properly. And here it says that everything is actually non-different from Krishna. Or in the next verse, I'll say that. That everything is that we're actually in the spiritual energy, but we just don't realize it. And we don't realize it because we're acting as if it's the material energy. Material energy means we think it's here for our enjoyment. And in order to enjoy it, we have to some degree or another, control it. We have to figure out how to manipulate the material nature to my liking. And therefore, instead of serving Krishna, we're serving our material, as it says in Bhagavad Gita, material whims. Whim means gross or subtly, trivida narakastyedam dwaram nashitam atmanaha, kama krodha tata lobas, tasmat etam trayam chajet. There are three gates leading to hell, lust, anger, and greed. Every sane man should become free from these three gates because they lead to the degradation of the self. Etara vimukta kontiya tamo dwara srivira achara yatnama shayas tato yati paramgati. Anyone who becomes free from these gates performs activities which are conducive to self-realization, and thus he obtains the supreme destination. In other words, as it says in the previous verse, that jitatmana prasantasya paramatma samahita Shitoshna sukude dukeshu tatamana pamanyo. That for one who has conquered the mind, it's the best of friends. And for one who failed to do so, his very mind will be the greatest enemy. For one who has conquered the mind, the supersoul, jitatmana prasantasya paramatma samahita, shitoshna sukude dukeshu tatamana pamanyo. For one who has conquered the mind, the supersoul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility in such a state, happiness and distress, honor and dishonor, heat and cold, they're all the same. Because one is not living on the material platform, one's consciousness is in Krishna consciousness. And therefore, in spite of whatever the external circumstances are, one is not actually existing in those circumstances, one is existing on the spiritual platform of existence. And therefore, one is not disturbed, as it says, in spite of the greatest difficulty. Now, this is actually freedom from all material miseries by the practice of the yoga system. So if we want to remain in the material world, then the result is that we have to suffer in the material existence. And if we go to the spiritual world by putting our consciousness on Krishna, then the result is that there's no more material existence. There's no more material suffering. There's only pure spiritual enjoyment in Krishna consciousness. So that's our choice, what we want to make. Now, of course, we can't suddenly decide throughout the whole day I'm going to think about Krishna and I'm not going to forget him, although that is our objective. But if we think about Krishna once during the day, if we think about Krishna twice the next day, then we've doubled our thinking about Krishna. And therefore, that's our success for that day. We've made some increase. We've made some advancement. And that advancement begins by hearing. Just as Brahma, he heard the words tapa, and he took it seriously. There is no dictionary. There is no internet to look it up. So he had to sit there and think, well, someone just told me tapa. It must have meant something. And he sat there and meditated on this word tapa. And then it was revealed, because there were it came from a transcendental source, it was revealed what it all meant in the course of time, because he took it seriously. Similarly, we chant Hare Krishna, and we have no idea what we're doing most of the time. But if we take it seriously and try and concentrate on it, then the result is gradually Krishna will reveal himself to us. Because Namas Chintamani Krishnas, Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha, Purno Shudo Niti Mukto Vinatvat Nama Namino. Because there's no difference between Krishna and his name. And therefore, if we take the name seriously, then the holy name will take us seriously. The only thing is we have to give up sense gratification, because they're incompatible. Or as it says, Parama Karuna Pahudvijana Nityai Gaura Chandra. So these two incarnations, Gaura and Nityai, they're the most merciful. They're Parama Karuna. Pahudvijana. Parama Karuna Pahudvijana Nityai Gaura Chandra. They're the most merciful Lords. Because Shabhavatar, Sharasiro Mani, Kevalananda, Andakanda. They're the very essence of all the incarnations. They're the Shiramani. They're the crest jewels of all the incarnations. And why are they the crest jewels? Because their process is simply Kevalananda. It's only joyful. The process is joyful. As a matter of fact, we're supposed to be joyful. If we're not joyful, if we're feeling morose, as Prabhupada said in one lecture, it's a sign of lack of Krishna consciousness. If one is actually in Krishna consciousness, then one is always in prasanatma, at least. Always happy and joyful. Jolly, as Prabhupada used to say. And what is, but, is that all we need? No. Bhaja bhaja bhai chaitanya nitai Surida Vishvasakori, Vishaya Charya Se Rase Majiya Muke Bolo Hari Hari. The only thing we have to do is regulate our sense gratification. We can't give it up entirely, but we should regulate it. Prabhupada said, just like salt to taste. Salt is necessary for the food to taste well. So you put a little salt, and then it tastes good. But if you put too much salt, then it tastes salty. It tastes terrible. So, enough sense gratification to keep the body and mind together. But, at the same time, muke bolo hari hari. Chant hari hari while we're engaging this material existence. So, that's the only tapasya in this age that's necessary. We don't have to learn rituals. We don't have to study extensively Sanskrit, right? Or go through great austerity. We have to learn how to regulate our sense gratification and chant happily Hare Krishna, joyfully. And in order to do that, of course, if our relationships with others are happy, joyful, if we become ladies and gentlemen in our relationships, if we become servant instruments of Krishna, then the result is, as Krishna, Yoga yukta vishuddhatma vijitatma jitendriha sarva bhutatma bhutatma kurvan natni lalipyate. Then one who works in devotion, who's a pure soul, controls his mind and senses, is dear to everyone and everyone is dear to him. Though always working, such a person is never entangled. So we don't have to find out so many things about psychology, how to win friends and influence people, how to read people's bodily, whatever, something about body reading or something. I have some science where you read people's bodies. You look at them, ah, long nose, like to smell things. Body language. We just have to become an instrument for Krishna. And then Krishna will give us the intelligence to understand who's listening and who's not, so we can wake them up. That's all the intelligence we need. Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago, Gaurachandra, Vole. then Bhaja Bhaja Vai Chaitanya Nitai Surida Vishvasakori, with some determination, Vishaya Charya Seira Semajiya Muke Bolo Hari Hari Deka Ori Bhai Trivu Bhuvanainai something Gata Pashu Pashi Gud Pashu Pashi Jure Pashani Vichari Sunigelo Guna Gata. So what's your proof that this actually works? Is there any evidence that actually if you just chant Hare Krishna, everything will become joyful? Well, the evidence is given that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in the Jharikhanda forest and he got the animals to chant and dance. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can get the animals to chant and dance, why can't he get us to chant and dance? Because we may not be able to be so powerful as to get animals to chant and dance, but we should be at least powerful enough to get people to dance, chant and dance. At least that much empowerment Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can give us. He's not going to make us into God, but he can make us into servants of Krishna. But he prays, unfortunately, somehow or another, due to my past misdeeds, Yamaraj is not allowing me to chant and dance. Maya is telling me, oh, you're not worthy of it. There's too many things to worry about. Don't you fix your mind upon this, about when you're dancing and chanting. There's so many other things you got to think about. You don't have time to chant and dance. Even when you're chanting and dancing, you don't have time to become joyful and simply fix your mind upon the holy name. No, you should worry about so many things while you're doing these things. So this is all called illusion, and it's not helpful. Well, we should go through the tapasya of giving up our anxiety and just fixing our mind when it's the appropriate time to chant and dance. If you want to worry, you want to be in anxiety, there's plenty of time during the day. Don't worry, you won't forget all your anxiety. It won't go away. But at least when we're chanting and dancing, we should be free from anxiety and become joyful, like Ananta is. He's always joyful when he's chanting. What's that? Well, you could actually see me. That shows how advanced you are. I can't even see myself. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
I didn't catch. So thinking properly of Krishna, that then you quoted Three Gates to Hell. So how is it that we should properly think of Krishna?
Just chant and listen. We've heard so many things about Krishna. We just become relaxed a little bit, chant happily. Then Krishna will give us the intelligence how to think about him. Just like we have the deities here. We look at the deity and we turn away, we can still see the deity. Then we're thinking about the deity. It doesn't require, you know, you have to go to school for 15 years and get your PhD in thinking about Krishna. It comes naturally. If we're actually concentrating our minds on the holy name. As I said often, if we chant the name Mickey Mouse, we don't have to worry about whether we're going to think of a mouse or not. It's all we can think about. So if we actually take seriously Krishna and chant his name, that's all we can think about, something about it. Now Krishna happens to have so many, just like we're surrounded with Krishna here, so many forms, you can't walk in here and think, yeah, where am I, what is this? Especially if we've been here for a while. You know, this is Krishna, this is Mother Jasoda, this is baby Krishna, this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We automatically, as soon as we see the pictures, automatically think about them. So if we chant and listen, then automatically we'll think about something about Krishna. Krishna will reveal himself to us.
Thank you.
Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Maharshi mentioned about intelligent design and intelligent designer behind this creation. And Prabhupada, as far as understood, he emphasized and the devotee should actually put endeavor to try to convince or to speak to amongst also scientific world to prove that there must be designer behind. That's why he established this Bhaktivedanta Institute and that. But it seems this is not so, how to say, not much is happening on this field. You have any comment on this?
Well, because we haven't designed the movement very intelligently. We can't prove intelligent design. We've designed the movement intelligently. We have a good beginning in proving intelligent design.
So how do you foresee that this can be fulfilled, this Prabhupada desire?
Well,
or how will it manifest?
It manifests itself when we finally realize if you chant Hare Krishna, everything else will be revealed. If you chant Hare Krishna senselessly. And if we organize the movement in such a way as we have, as Prabhupada writes in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, text 65, one should arrange one's life in such a way that throughout the 24 hours a day one cannot help but think about Krishna. And the Lord promises that anyone who does that, he's sure to go back to the spiritual world. So we do that, everything will be revealed, and it will do all these things.
So we just chant purely and everything else will manifest automatically.
We chant purely and we do everything else so that we can chant purely. It's not that we just chant. If we chant purely, Krishna will give us the intelligence how to arrange everything else so that we can chant purely. And if we arrange everything else to chant purely, then we'll be able to more easily chant purely. So it's not just chanting. It's doing everything else so that we can chant purely. Now that, as Prabhupada said, you sit down for 15 minutes, you try and meditate throughout the other 23 hours or whatever, you do all kinds of nonsense. No, that won't work. You'll sit down for 15 minutes and all you'll do is think about nonsense.
Okay, thank you. Another question which I have, or comment or observation. So Maharaj said the process is joyful, prasanatma, and that is a sign. If you are not in very joyful mood, there is not good sign of our Krishna consciousness. But one devotee, disciple, Prabhupada, saw him, how Prabhupada was very serious, grave, and sad, something like that.
No, there's the cover of that, the Happening album, the back cover of the Happening album. So you looked like you were really sad, Prabhupada.
Yes, something like that.
Because that was one of the happiest moments of my existence.
So how can we understand that a person is joyful if there is no external signs?
Well, we can't understand anything. Why should we understand that? How can you understand it? You have to become like him. You'll understand it. Like, you have to come to the same level of consciousness that person's on. They'll understand what level they're on.
But for the new people, this is impossible because they're...
That's right, it's impossible. They can't understand. If we're somehow to explain it to them. Best we can. Remember it says, what is there, some verse about that mukha, something that the pure, no one can understand actually the pure devotee.
But that is our observation of general people, that when they see devotees in Harinam, that these are very joyful people and they are...
Just quite on the level of Prabhupada. Easier to understand us than Prabhupada. We're getting a little joyful. We don't understand what real...
I think Prabhupada, if I understood properly, remember properly, he mentioned that you don't understand the science of transcendental ecstasy.
No, that's a fact. We already know that. An analogy is like when a child is 3 years old, you're trying to explain to them what the psychology of Freud. But they can understand. They don't understand anything you're talking about. Well, We can get some glimpse. We go over it, we can get some glimpse sometimes, but to understand it, how do we understand a life of pure joy eternally? We get one drop and we think we're, you know, we've experienced everything.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.